Hello. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where both hosts need to be kept on a short leash at all times. So I don't want to offend every other guest I've had, Dominique Foxworth, Ryan Clark, Mike Golic Jr. You guys were all great, but you're basically trash and mean nothing to me personally compared to today's guest. He is an icon. He is a Seattle legend. He is a person that I place in higher esteem than blood relatives. That's right, folks. It's Matt Hasselbeck. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Wow. I wasn't expecting that, Mina. Thank you.
So if you feel uncomfortable now, I'm about to make it even weirder for you. I apologize in advance. But I did tell you before, I am a lifelong Seattle fan, as listeners to this podcast know. I own two of your jerseys. One is authentic and was purchased at a pro shop. The other is a counterfeit jersey I bought in Korea. I was wondering, do you think you could be able to tell it's a counterfeit if you saw me? It's like the closer you get, the more you can see that the details are a little bit off.
You know, it actually happens sometimes since I wore the number 8. When they make counterfeit jerseys, sometimes they put the 8 upside down, or they'll screw it up some way. And I guess you can do that on like that old school Reebok jersey. So
yeah,
I have been able to tell at times. Usually, it's not hard at all to tell what a counterfeit jersey is.
You were wearing one of the old school jerseys on Monday night. You raised the 12th flag, the 12th man flag. Did they give that to you, or did you pull it out of your closet? How did that work out?
They did give it to me, and that's why I don't have a voice, by the way. I don't really have a voice right now because as anyone who's ever attended a Seahawks football game knows, you lose your voice. Like, you literally lose your voice mm-hmm. by the end of the
yes.
game. And so that's kind of what happened to me. But yeah, I showed up there. They gave me the option. They said, listen, do you want to wear the current jersey or would you like to wear one of your throwback jerseys? And I said, well, you know, it might be cool to wear a throwback jersey. But they said, well, which one? The AFC West jersey, like that old, like royal blue and green looking
oh,
like
yeah.
one the gyms wore, which was very tempting, or the one that you wore for 9 years of your career, the other 9 years. And, I was like, well, you guys can pick. So they picked that one out, and that was actually one of my game jerseys that was, like, designed to be super slim-fitting, over-the-shoulder pads, no one can grab it, and that's how it felt. So I was kind of bundled up for warm weather and had a couple shirts on and a sweater, and that thing was very snug.
It was a little snug. I did like the dress shirt collar peeking out of underneath the jersey. That's like a peak dad move. Wearing a button down underneath the jersey. You don't see that a lot. It was great to see you there.
My kids let me know. Yeah.
Listen, at least you didn't have to wear action green. God forbid the travesty that is action. I was so embarrassed that they wore action green on Monday Night Football. Cause for me, it was like, guys, we have company. Like, we don't have to show the world this action green color.
Oh, you're not a fan. See, usually I would guess people in your age demographic would really like it. It's usually like the older people that don't like it.
It's I guess that means I'm old, is to answer your question.
No, well, maybe. You're an old soul.
Yeah. It's upsetting to the eyes.
We had an opportunity to wear that color when I was playing there. It was the Jim Mora year, and they wore that action green color against the Chicago Bears, and it was the game that I missed that season. I think I had maybe like broken ribs or something. And Seneca Wallace got to wear the action green. And I remembered being just a little bit jealous that I never got to wear that color. And then we ended up losing the game at the very end of the game. And I think that's why we never wore them again.
I was just about to say, I remember that game in particular. I think they've been successful in action green lately. Not as successful as Wolf Gray. Not that I keep close track of those things. So today is going to be a little different, guys. Instead of talking about this weekend's games, I feel like we've been talking about the Bears, the Rams, the Chiefs over and over and over. Since we have Matt on the show, we're going to do something a little bit different, something I've been keen on for a while. We're going to talk about the young quarterbacks. We're going to actually do a young quarterback, a 25 and under draft, and I'm really curious to hear Matt's takes on sort of where some of these guys are, not just the rookies, but a few of the second and third and fourth year even quarterbacks and where they stand. But before we get to that, Matt, coming off of the game, I wanted to indulge myself, really, in a little bit of Hawk talk and ask you, you know, starting with the good guys, Seattle, what surprised you most about this team relative to your expectations at the beginning of the season?
Well, like everybody, I think everyone thought that this was going to be a real big rebuilding year. They lost, you know, what they lost on defense. They started out really slow, 4-5. You know, they lost week one. I believe it was at Denver. We were at the Monday night game in Chicago. They lost to Chicago before we really knew how good Chicago really was. But on the flight home from Chicago, Pete Carroll and Coach Schottenheimer had a conversation, and Pete Carroll said, listen, I need us to get back to what I wanted to be all along. And we are going to be first and foremost a running team. It'll help out our defense. It'll help out our pass protection. It'll help out everything. And it's happened. They're the number one rushing team in football. And for a team that really looked bad running the ball early in the year, it's really impressive to see what Mike Solari has done. Chris Carson, they've loved him for a long time. I think the rest of the backs, they're still trying to figure out who's going to be that go-to guy at the number two spot. But they've got three backs that can play. And, you know, in terms of, you know, being a rushing team like they want to be, that's what they are. And everything from that has been working. Play action's been working. Russell Wilson's trusting his protection more because the protection's better. So much easier to be a good offensive lineman when you're running the football well.
Yeah. Well, and last on Monday night, you know, obviously the offense did kind of lay an egg, but would you say that's simply, would you lay it on uncharacteristic game from Wilson? Because yes, the rushing game was efficient, which probably ended up being the difference in that game between two really inefficient or unsuccessful offenses. But Wilson, to me, you know, he looked hesitant. He had some issues with decision making. Guys were mostly covered. I saw Lockett open a few times, but it kind of just felt like an off game from him. Do you think it's just a blip in this Seahawks offense?
Well, I mean, a couple of things. I mean, this is the NFL, so you're going to have games where your offense isn't clicking or your defense isn't clicking, but over the long haul. And that's why, you know, week 15, when you look at the kind of the stats, like the rankings, this offense running the ball, the rankings where they are for the whole season tells a better picture than, you know, how they struggle in one particular game. You know, it'd be like saying Drew Brees really looked pedestrian against the Dallas Cowboys on Thursday night last week. So therefore I'm worried about Drew Brees. I'm not worried about Drew Brees. I'm not worried about Tom Brady who lost in Miami. I'm simply just not worried about it, but they didn't look their best. Sometimes that can happen, you know, quite honestly, just because, you know, Doug Baldwin didn't play that night. And, hey, I was expecting to have him or, like, whatever it might be. You know, maybe one play here or there. But it never felt, to me anyway, being at the game, it never felt like at any point in that game like Seattle was in danger of losing that game. And so, you know, that's quite a thing to say about a team playing the Minnesota Vikings, who themselves are a playoff team, themselves had Super Bowl aspirations. We know what kind of defense they're capable of having. And so, you know, I think the Seahawks are a team that's getting hot at the right time.
Yeah, and well, again, to go back to expectations coming into the season, what I called 8-8 for this team, and which it looks like they'll easily surpass, and what I wanted to see was some development from some of the younger players on both sides of the ball, and really coming out of the game, Matt, I was just so impressed by some of the young guys on defense. You saw a rebound game from Shaquille Griffin, the cornerback. Trey Flowers made a few huge plays. Jacob Martin up the middle. I mean, just guys that are coming out, guys who didn't have an opportunity to play over the last few years, right? Because you had all those stars on the roster. And what a credit to Pete Carroll. I think probably one of the best secondary coaches in NFL history, and we're certainly seeing that this year.
Yeah, well, one of the best coaches in NFL history, I probably would say. And, you know, in particular in the back end, you know, Brad McDougal, the strong safety, kind of playing that Cam Chancellor spot, he's going to be a very, very good player. And I think, you know, the opposite corner to Griffin, Trey Flowers, number 37, he's come along for a fifth-round pick. I mean, you know, impressive. But the guy, to me, that's really been – you know, David Moore, number 83, was on the practice squad, was a non-factor. You know, in that Chicago game, I think Brandon Marshall was the starting split end at that point. And, you know, they ended up getting rid of Brandon Marshall because of how much they love David Moore and his just they basically were like, listen, we need this kid to grow up, a seventh round draft pick. And he's been a touchdown machine for Russell Wilson. When you've got the trust of the quarterback the way that he does, that's a factor that wasn't a factor early in the year that is a factor now.
Yeah, it does remind me a little bit of how much Wilson trusted Jermaine Kearse at times in the way. Mm-hmm. It honestly, on Monday, it didn't work out so well with David Moore, but over the course of the season, you can't deny that he's been quite a pleasant surprise for them. Okay, that's enough Hawk talk. Sorry, guys. Got it out of the way. I had to ask because Matt was here. We're going to talk about the young quarterback. So before we get into this, Matt, I'm going to list them all for everyone. I went 25 and under, so that rules out some guys, some of the 26, 27, like Jimmy, Derek Carr, 27, Cam Newton, and Andrew Luck is 29, which is shocking. I would have thought he was older than that. Wilson's 30. Mm. So here's the list overall, and then I'm going to let you draft one first. I think it's pretty obvious in my mind. Maybe you might shock me who the number one is. But here's the list of the quarterbacks.
Is this
okay?
Like a redraft? Is that what we're kind of saying? Or redraft?
No, we're just going to pick who we like. You and I are GMs, and then explain why. Baker, Mahomes, obviously. Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson from this year. Mitchell Trubisky, Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz. It's a lot of guys. Jameis Winston and Mariota, which is shocking, by the way, that they're both under 25. They feel much older to me. Okay, so that's the list. So you get to go first because you're the guest.
All right. Well, I'm going to go first, and I'll take Patrick Mahomes, my favorite quarterback to watch right now. Listen, Andy Reid was my quarterback's coach my rookie year with the Green Bay Packers. I love the guy. He makes it so simple. I watched him coach Brett Favre in Joe Montana's offense, which is like two contrasting things. You got the best rhythm passer of all time, you know, in Favre, the gunslinger of all gunslingers, who's thrown the ball from his knees, left-handed, all of it. And so I kind of see the best of everything in Patrick Mahomes. He's an on-time thrower, and he's out there just toying with people with no-look passes and throwing the ball lefty. But don't be distracted by all that stuff. He's actually one of the best rhythm, on-time, do-it-the-way-you're-supposed-to passers in the game right now, and I love it.
Obviously, you've seen a lot of Brett Favre. I mean, watching the conversation around the no-look pass, we were thinking to yourself, I saw that all the time in practice.
Yeah, I mean, but like seeing it in practice is one thing. Seeing it like in scout team is one thing. Seeing it like another, like the other thing is like, you know, doing it in a game is a whole nother deal. It's like completely different and even more impressive just that he's doing it at such a young age.
Yeah, I was so impressed by him in this. I think Baltimore is probably one of the three best defenses in the NFL, and he was just under pressure. Matt Judon is just incredible, by the way, and it wrote down his name like 20 times during that game. And Mahomes was just, you know, Baltimore brings such creative pressure, and he was able to deal with it so magnificently compared to some of the guys we're going to talk about later in this QB draft. He just does it all. And so I want to ask you, Matt, the same question I ask everyone about Pat Mahomes, which is, if you had to name a weakness, what would it be? It's hard.
I don't know if I have
it's
weakness.
Really hard.
You know, the weakness.
It's so
the
difficult.
Weakness is going to be that everyone's gunning for you, and like you could study all week as a quarterback in the NFL. You come in Tuesday and you watch all the games you can on your opponent. You know, maybe like four games, and then you study Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, everything that they've shown, and that's what you go out and play with. Like you see what they've done and what they're going to do. Poor Patrick Mahomes doesn't have that ability. They're going to do something new to someone like him. They're going to invent a new game plan because of they have to stop him. And so he's not going to know. So like these game plans that he's had early this first half of the season, that's been the normal thing. They just play what they've done normally. They play Andy Reid the way they play Andy Reid. They can't do that anymore. And so the disadvantage for him, the weakness, is going to be he's going to have to make – more adjustments in game than the rest of the quarterbacks in the NFL. That's just what's going to happen to him. And that's what happened to Peyton Manning at a certain stretch in his career, Tom Brady at a certain stretch in his career. If you can make it through, you're going to be one of the greats of all time.
Man, one of the greats of all time. Everything you're saying, I mean, that's just what was going through my head in the Baltimore game, because I think they're one of the few defenses in the NFL capable of making those sorts of adjustments with him. And he just passes every test. It's ridiculous. I don't really have much to say about Patrick Mahomes. So I'm going to move to my pick, which is Baker Mayfield. I don't know if you agree with him there compared to some of the other guys. But to me, he's another quarterback. I just used the phrase passed every test. And where he is as a rookie, Matt, it developmentally to me is so far ahead of every other rookie in the NFL at this point. It's crazy. I mean, you know, we've all heard his stats relative to, you know, since Hugh left, how much they've improved over the last, you know, few games. He ranks amongst the tops in the NFL the last 5 or 6 games and just about every statistic you can come up with. But one thing that has really jumped out to me watching him, over the last few weeks is how much defenses are respecting him, how he's not getting, he's increasingly, they're not blitzing him because they're afraid of him, right? And I just feel like next season, he's on a pace to where next season he's going to be significantly ahead of the other young quarterbacks in this league.
Okay. Maybe. I'm going to say
no,
maybe.
Tell me why I'm wrong. Am I too high on him?
You're definitely not wrong. But I think there's just a lot that remains to be seen for him and that team. I mean, there's an old saying, or I don't know if it's an old saying, but like a great quarterback never gets a coach fired. Well, it's two guys gone already, and maybe he wasn't playing at the time, so maybe that's not fair. But I mean, this is a team that's, they're not at the level of these other teams. They're on their way, and I think they're going to be I think they're going to be a great team someday. I think they're going to figure it out. If they get the right head coach with Baker Mayfield's ability, the draft picks that everybody that came before them has been stockpiling for them, with an awesome fan base, with a great crowd and a great crowd noise opportunity there, I think they've got the ability to do that. What I love about Baker, besides his accuracy, which I love, and I really like his throwing mechanics, what I really love is just that intangible factor where, whether it's his teammates that believe in him, the stadium believes in him, I think the opposing team kind of believes in him. Like if you were to give him the ball in a 2-minute situation, to take you down and lead, you know, for a game winning kick or something like that, it almost feels like the guys on defense are saying to themselves, oh man, Baker Mayfield magic. Like they believe it. And that's really special. Yeah. And that's, you can't coach that. And some guys have that and have had it. I think he already has it. And That's not something Cleveland's had in a long time. So for that reason, I will agree with you. But I just don't know that I'm 100% sold already. I bet on it. It's early.
Well, and he's accuracy is the word. I mean, shockingly, right? The guy who was so accurate in college turned out he was pretty accurate. That's his thing. And he's accurate downfield. He had that pass to Landry this weekend. My goodness, some of the off-platform throws as well. But he has a better situation offensively, in my mind, than the other rookie quarterbacks who we'll get to. So, you know, I said he has an edge developmentally, but he also has an edge in terms of personnel, and I think that's probably helped him a lot when we're, you know, talking about them relatively. All right, who's next for you?
I don't know. I forget the under 25. Give me a name and I'll just go with it. Who do you think I should pick?
Okay. Well, some guys, like I got Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson would be there. Wentz and Goff probably in the mix.
Okay. So
Dak,
why don't we go with Goff?
Mitchell.
Well, I like Carson Wentz a lot. I could talk about any of these guys. Why don't we just go with Carson Wentz since he's a hot topic guy right now. I think Carson Wentz, you know, obviously – Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, same draft class. But Carson Wentz is the kind of guy you get if you're trying to build a franchise around a guy. Like, he's just that guy in every way. In the community, tough, strong as nails. Reminds me a lot of Andrew Luck, like kind of the qualities that he has. A lot of potential. A little bit of potential to get himself hurt. A little potential to try to do too much. A little potential to...
A lot of potential, I'd say.
You know, kind of like this wild racehorse that you kind of just got to tame a little bit. You know, the sayings I hear guys use are, hey, less adventure on your throwaways. Like, if you're going to throw the ball away, just throw it away. You don't have to have, like, the guy, the defender doing, like, a Tony, you know, toe tap at the sideline, like, trying to intercept it. And we don't need you taking a big hit, trying to draw a 15-yard unsportsmanlike penalty on a throwaway. Like, we need you to have a long, long career. Guys like that usually struggle at times when they don't let the offense work for them. I think for Andrew Luck, it's like forcing it to T.Y. Hilton. For Carson Wentz, I'd say it's forcing it to Zach Ertz. Zach Ertz is one of the best tight ends in the game. He's the number one targeted tight end. He's number six in terms of all receivers and getting targets. That's not necessarily how that Doug Peterson offense is supposed to work. It's more like kind of like Nick Foles was running it in the Super Bowl. Like, listen, this ball will go wherever the defense decides it's supposed to go. And I think you'll see Carson take that jump. This year was a tough year for the Eagles for a lot of reasons. But I think when Carson gets back healthy and really figures out that he's got to sort of trust the offense more than he trusts his own athleticism and ability, I think you'll see that big jump from him like we saw last year. I mean, last year he was unbelievable to start the season.
Well, it's interesting because comparing last year to this year and trying to figure out, everyone's been trying to figure out what's wrong with the Eagles. And Carson Wentz is like number, 20 on the list of things that are right. I mean, he's been largely very good and they've got much bigger problems with him, ranging from injuries to just regression to the brain drain. However, I think, Matt, you were talking about how he kind of, I don't want to call it hero ball, right? Like, to use the basketball term, but like he does force it sometimes. And even when he was incredible last year and he was on pace for, he was in the MVP pool, he would still do it. The difference is it worked, right? In part because of his insane athleticism and toughness that you're referring to. So in many ways, he's still the same QB. He still sometimes holds on to it a little bit too long and forces it, but it's just not working this year. So I agree with you that in terms of his development and what we want to see from him once he's fully healthy, I'd like to see less of that. I'd like to see him, as you just described, playing this Eagles offense where he takes what the defense gives him instead of forcing it to Ertz or, just leaning on himself too much. Are you, just to kind of, so he might not play this weekend, right? We're hearing there's, I think, back problems I saw.
Yeah.
Are you worried about his health, though, taking him so high in our hypothetical QB draft?
Well, I wasn't prepared for the draft part of it, but I'm good at critiquing or complimenting these guys. Am I concerned about his health? Listen, a little bit. Like, coaches always say to quarterbacks, hey, it's great to have all this ability, but the greatest ability is availability. And if you aren't available, it doesn't matter how talented you are. And even, I thought it was interesting, Steve Young, who I worked with on Monday Night Countdown, he said last week, he's like, listen, you can miss a season with an injury. You can't miss two. Like, you can't end the season on IR 2 years in a row. Like, it's the kiss of death for a career. Can't do it. And so he really believed it's in the back of a guy like Carson's head. We'll never know because only Carson would know. But, that's not something I'd ever thought of. But maybe, just maybe. You see guys start slow. You mentioned Deshaun Watson. He's playing great football. But, early this season, they started out 0-3. He wasn't playing great football, and he's coming off of that same injury, that ACL injury. And, I've never ended a year on IR. I've never had a surgery like that. So I can't speak to, what that might feel like, but I've had an off-season surgery, and I know what it's like kind of going into that first game where you're about to get hit again. They take off the red quarterback jersey, and, it's such a commitment to that rehab coming off of surgery that you don't want any setbacks. And so just, I think, watching Carson Wentz at training camp this year, when he said, hey, I'm clear, I'm good, I can go, and the doctors were holding him back and Doug Peterson was holding him back, I think there's just a fine line as an athlete, as a quarterback, of really going full steam the way you that's why you played your whole life, and then also coming back from a major surgery. There's an art to that. And I think Carson probably is feeling his way through that, maybe even still.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned Watson, because he would be my next guy. I think it's probably between him and Goff in this kind of tier of the young quarterbacks, as I would put them. But he, in my mind, has taken a lot. I mean, what he's been able to do this season coming off the injury, the reasons you just described that, could affect not only his play but his mindset, has been really impressive, especially during the Texans' winning streak. Now, when they came out 0-3, you're right, some of that was on Watson. I thought some of that was on the game plan. I mean, they had so many design runs for him. I don't know if you remember that Cowboys game where they were at the goal line and Bill O'Brien just kept having him running. Everyone was screaming, stop having him run. He's getting killed out there and he can't take airplanes. And then what you saw during the winning streak, Matt, is, in my mind, the run game started working and that alleviated a lot of the pressure on him, but he started getting the ball out quicker. His footwork in the pocket has improved a lot this season. Again, I think he took a bit of a step back on Sunday. But to me, the reason I'm taking him so high, I think you're seeing like what you want to see year two. You know what I mean? Like he looks, there's no regression here. He's only moving forward. And I have the same health concerns that we have about Wentz for Deshaun. Some of that is to his, you know, his body type and the way he runs, and he still scrambles a lot and a little bit too quickly. But by and large, I've been really, really impressed with him this season.
Yeah, and listen, when a player comes off an injury, it's not just the player that has to feel his way back into it. It's the play caller. You mentioned Bill O'Brien. I mean, you got a guy that had the injury that Deshaun had. I think it was a non-contact ACL injury. Now you're out there calling plays. You got to, manual to this thing. You know, like you got to feel it out yourself. Like, you know the strengths and weaknesses of your team and how do you get your guy feeling comfortable and keep him healthy and all that. So I think they like you said, they took him a little bit, but they figured it out. I'll take Jared Goff. I'll take Jared Goff next. He did not have a great game in Chicago in the cold weather, but you got to love this kid as a quarterback. You hear a lot of different things out there about him. You know, they don't want to give him a lot of credit because Sean McVay is so smart and all that, but it's both. You know, it's the same reason you give Drew Brees credit and Sean Payton credit. Give them both credit. There's enough credit to go around. I think with this Rams offense, yes, it runs through Todd Gurley. Yes, it's a big outside zone team. Yes, they're under center more than any, quarterback in the NFL. Yeah. That's okay. Jared Goff is playing that offense, playing that system as well as it can be played, again, with the exception of last week. But I really like what I see. I love Sean McVay as the play caller. And a lot of times with these young quarterbacks, it almost matters more where you get drafted to and who the coach is going to be. That almost matters more than anything else. Oh. And I think sometimes this has been my experience, and I know there's a lot of quarterbacks that would feel the same way. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, like there's guys that would feel the same way. Your first year and who the quarterbacks are in the room, like who you learn from, who helps you sort of take the training wheels off in the NFL is very important. And for Jared Goff, like guys don't talk about it, but he had Nick Foles and Case Keenum when he first got there to kind of learn from how to be a professional and, you know, how to fight through injury, how to take coaching, how to game plan, like whatever it is, all that stuff. I think it really, there's value in that for his career, and it shows to me. And I think this guy's going to have a long, long career, a very good career. And obviously he's on one of the, if not the best team in the NFL right now. So he'd be an easy guy to coach. I know that.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you one quick thing about Goff, because coming off of the Chicago game, it was funny. Everybody immediately went to Jared Goff can't play in cold weather. And I laughed a little because I was like, how about Jared Goff can't play against the best defense in the NFL? Because I think that's a little bit more impactful than the weather. However, he has been a lot worse against pressure, Matt. I mean, just not just in this game, but over the years, this year, when he's pressured, his QBR takes a bigger drop off than any other passer in the NFL. And is that something you're concerned about, and how can he improve in that area?
I'm not concerned. I think, you know, the best thing for that team is they could be a home team because of how much communication they do at the line of scrimmage. The other thing is they don't want to be in tight games. They would much rather be up in a game and, you know, get to run their real offense, not have their, you know, tackles dropping back, trying to block Khalil Mack, you know, like just seven-step drops all day. They want to be a play-action team side to side. That's what they want to be. I also think Jared Goff hasn't played as well since Cooper Kupp's not been on the field.
Yes.
But that's something they got to figure out. They got to overcome that. But, you know, it's a long season, and, Todd Gurley had 11 carries for 28 yards or something like that. Like, you're going to play, as Mike Holmgren used to always say, hey, listen, you're allowed one stinker. You're allowed one stinker every year, one. And that was their stinker, you know. Drew Brees had his stinker on Thursday Night Football, against the Cowboys. And, you know, I think this Rams team, they'll bounce back. They'll be the one or the two seed. They'll have a bye. What they need to realize, though, and I'm sure they do because they went down to New Orleans, they need to realize that one seed – is very important for them because they can beat the Saints in L.A. I do not know for sure if they believe they can go to New Orleans and beat the Saints down there. Mm-hmm. That would be a much tougher task. That's a tough place to win on the road.
Well, before we take a quick break, the next guy I'm going to take, I don't feel great about. And I think some of the rookies have more promise than him potentially at this point, but I'm going to go with Dak Prescott. It's funny. We talked about Wentz earlier. They both played pretty similar games, actually, in the Sunday game. They were both really, really bad until the end, basically. And Dak's kind of been that way all season. He's just been really inconsistent. Obviously, and we've beaten this topic to death on our network, Amari has unlocked something in him. The statistics tell a very clear story there. I'm very concerned, though. There were times I remember in his rookie season where people were worried about him locking on to Dez, and I do worry a little bit, like, what happens when you take away Amari in a game? What happens where they play a defense that's capable of that? But I've seen enough from him in terms of just raw ability, the stuff he showed in 2016 and at times this year, that I still think he has a lot of potential.
Sure. What I like most about Dak is probably his leadership style. Like, I think the guys really love him. You know, they trust him. Yeah. Just a lot of missed throws this year for whatever reason. Yeah. I feel like if there's a stat for missing wide open guys on deep balls, like, that's an area of – there's an opportunity for huge improvement there. And I think that's probably why they went out and got Amari Cooper. I mean, in overtime or the second half this year, he's completing 88% of his passes to Amari Cooper. Like, that's an obnoxiously high number. And so maybe that's what we can see more of when he – feels that kind of chemistry with the other guys that they have, or maybe they go get other guys. He's a younger player, so he's going to be there a while. But to me, there's room for improvement for him. He's got the skills. We just haven't seen it put together yet.
As a quarterback, does it concern you more, and we're going to talk about Mitchell Trubisky later, and I have some thoughts on that with him, but does it concern you more if a quarterback's missing is inaccurate and missing guys because of vision, or if it's more because of his mechanics and his footwork, which I personally see a lot of issues with Dak on?
Yeah, I think you can just be a natural thrower. Like, it's just like your mechanics are naturally great. You know, if Dak throws a really flat ball sometimes, which is fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of like being a 3-point shooter and you're shooting line drives. Like, just the physics of it, your chances for success are lower. It doesn't mean you can't hit them, but, you know, the great shooters or the great throwers have a certain trajectory to your ball. Like, in quarterbacking, like, when you're watching film, the nose of the ball should be heading down. Like, the ball should turn over. So the nose of the ball should be heading down when the ball is halfway to the receiver on a go route, which should be caught between 42 and 45 yards past the line of scrimmage. And so, like, that's something you can just see. Some balls are, like, dropping in the bucket to a guy over a defender, and other balls are sort of like running away from a receiver who's already, by the way, running at his top end speed, which it's tough to catch an NFL quarterback throw anyway, but to catch it when you're running at your top end track speed also, it just makes it tougher. And so, you know, I think that's probably one of the things I see in Dak. Now, there's other guys, like, say, Russell Wilson, for an example. His deep ball comes right down the bucket. Like, I don't care how mm-hmm. tall or how short Russell Wilson is. That ball is turning over halfway through, and it is a very, very catchable go ball. And there's guys that throw it like that. And so to me, that's probably my biggest concern about Dak. Would be, and also, side note, I thought the Eagles, I'm not one to complain about officiating ever, kind of make a point of it, but what in the world was going on with the Eagles should be livid. They got robbed in that game.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
The Dallas, the OPI
was ridiculous.
Was just insane.
The OPI on Dallas Goedert was the biggest joke of a call I've ever seen this year. It was just, I'm sick about it. In fact, I actually got so disgusted at one point in the game, I turned the game off. I was like so angry. I don't know if there's like deep-seated like things I've been suppressing in my past and they just kind of came to light or something, but I got way too upset over that. It just felt like it didn't feel right. Something felt very dirty about that, or incompetent maybe is the word. It was bad. I didn't like it.
imagine being a fan and living through that, and then having the Russell Douglas tip. I mean, I just felt sick for. I'm related to a lot of Eagles fans, and I was like, oh, I can't even text them. What are they going through right now? I'd be so angry. Matt, before we get to the back half of the young QBs, I always do a quick segment where I take questions from listeners.
Question. Okay. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
All right. Burning through these quickly. Couldn't get my reviews to load today, so I just took some questions from Twitter. Asale41 asks, Baker or Saquon for Offensive Rookie of the Year? I gotta go with, I'm a QB is always MVP person. I'm sorry, value, but, for Offensive Rookie of the Year, I gotta go with Saquon right now. What about you, Matt?
No, I would say no. I'm going Baker. And I love Saquon Barkley. He's one of the most impressive people you could ever meet in person. He's just a great, great guy. What Baker Mayfield has done, he has really changed. He's brought hope to the entire fan base of the Cleveland Browns, to that city. They're winning games now. Saquon Barkley, he's great and he's a human highlight reel, but they're not winning a ton of games just because of him. And I think Baker Mayfield, they are.
Well, are you with me then on the MVP's pretty much always quarterback? Because
no, it doesn't have to be. I think some quarterbacks get way too much credit sometimes, but think about it. What were the Browns before Baker Mayfield and what have they been since he started playing? Or really, since he went in. It's hard to get wins, and he's getting them wins, and he's getting the franchise wins that had a hard time getting wins. And I especially what I think I'm most impressed about, most impressed by, is his post game. His post game press conferences, he is like a vet of all vets. I love it. I just love it. And again, he's kind of got what you can't coach. And then at the same time, I think he's pretty coachable. And so those two combinations are what you're looking for.
Yeah, the coach, just looking how he's responded to Freddie Kitchens, who, by the way, has been an absolute delight as a play caller this year. It was just going back and watching.
He's a pretty good interview, too, game. I would say, Freddie Kitchens.
Kitchens? Is he?
Yeah, he's a good interview.
They've got to find a way to keep that guy.
I saw they asked him, what he learned from Bruce Arians. Bruce Arians is one of the great coaches of all time, play callers. And he said, I learned how to mix a drink. Thought it was funny.
Okay. KOOLWHB asks, what's the first movie you remember seeing in a theater? I think The Lion King, 1994.
Really?
Giving away my age a little bit there. How about you?
Wow. Oh, I'm going to give my age away. I think I was in college in 1994. I think my first movie was E.T., actually. In Dedham, E.T. Massachusetts, at the movie theater there that is now demolished and doesn't exist. But E.T. Phone Home. Good movie.
A classic. Dan Morris asks, what Seahawk does Lenny is my dog, as you'll discover later, most resemble in either appearance or personality? I'll go with personality and say Doug Baldwin, because Lenny is passionate and occasionally very surly. Spencer Kelly 7 asks, building off of your Hopkins article, can you name a current receiver who is a quarterback change away from being a household name? So, man, I just did a story about sort of DeAndre Hopkins and all the quarterbacks he played with throughout the years and how, finally he's kind of got the guy in Houston. So a current receiver who I think would become a household name, and I actually I don't think Case Keenum's by any means a terrible quarterback, but I'm very high on Cortland Sutton in Denver. I'm a big fan of his. Tough question. Most receivers are already household names, so... question.
I think the guy that doesn't get enough credit is Mike Evans in Tampa. I think Mike Evans is a really good receiver, really good.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Jameis whenever he gets taken at the end of our draft. So that's an interesting one to think about how his it might be a little bit different for him with a different quarterback. S Shart 312 asks, what is Lenny's favorite treat? Again, very dog-centric podcast. Looking to get my pup something new for Christmas. I just got him a Furbo, which is a camera that shoots out treats, so my dog's now living in a surveillance state. Have you ever heard of those? Do you have a dog?
Wow. I do. He's laying on my leg right now, actually.
I had no idea. Wow. There's two dogs on this podcast right now. we're going to get back to the quarterback draft, so I'm just going to read the quarterbacks one more time that are remaining. Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Jackson, the rookies. It's funny because they're all in such well, less Lamar, but the other three are in such bad situations, it's so hard to evaluate them, which is a whole other issue. But, and then we got Mitchell Trubisky and then Winston Mariota. Matt, who you take first?
Man, this is tough. This is a critical point here, but I think I'll go Trubisky.
Really?
How about that? Yeah,
that's fair.
I think so. And I'm because I liked him coming out of the draft so much. Like, I really liked him.
So
he was
bad.
My top guy, most prepared in that draft. I would not have taken him 2 overall, but I think he's a good player. And like, just listening to Rex Ryan, I work with Rex Ryan on Sunday Countdown every Sunday morning, and basically he calls him Mitchell Vick. Like, he thinks he's such an amazing runner.
Oh,
and I don't really
see
it when I watch Trubisky, but the numbers are unbelievable. Like, him as a runner, the numbers are unbelievable. And so, you know, just I guess I like hearing from a defensive coordinator type guy like Rex Ryan. Who would you not want to game plan for? And it's for him, it's Mitchell Vick.
Don't you feel like so it's funny you mentioned Rex Ryan, because I remember talking to him about Tyrod Taylor, you know, who he liked a lot in the Bills, and he also really liked him. And I always feel like, Matt, that defensive coordinators really hate playing dual threat quarterbacks more. Maybe like, it's almost like defensive coordinators tend to like them more than offensive coordinators, right? Because they're afraid of them, and OCs can't really game plan for them the way that they like. And I think it's funny, a lot of the guys, by the way, left on this list are dual threat quarterbacks. I mean, if you think Mitchell Trubisky can run, watch Josh Allen, right? But so I do love that aspect of Trubisky's game, but man, he really struggles with accuracy and decision making sometimes. I mean, do you think I'm being too hard on him? Because he was way worse than Goff in that game, in my opinion.
But I think he's coming, like, for me, he's coming from, you almost got to get the John Fox style of winning out of him. Like, John Fox, you know, a successful coach, been to Super Bowls, but his style is very defensive oriented and like, hey, just don't screw it up on offense a little bit, right? And so he's now going to Matt Nagy, who's more this like cutting edge, he's basically running that Mahomes offense. And he's like, hey, we're going to win. Like, we're going to fireworks, man, both sides of the ball and special teams, fireworks. We're a fireworks team. Like, I want this to look like an arena football game. Like, we're just, like, cutting it loose. And I think it's like, almost been a slow process for him. But, again, this is a tough call. But I think he's a guy that's got a huge upside. And, I'm almost thinking, who could I coach? Who would I want to coach, and who do I know I could get some wins with? And I could do that.
Yeah. He has tools. I guess it just, you know, you talked earlier about the guys who are throw catchable deep balls, and he, whatever the far opposite of catchable is on deep balls. I mean,
Matt Nagy's offense. Maybe that's
I mean, don't we all? Goodness. Listen, if any offense where you've got a big guy, two big guys involved in the touchdown is fine with me. This is getting really hard here with these guys. I'm going to kind of match you and do a guy I was high on coming out of the draft. This is, people are going to think I'm taking him way too high, but I still like Sam Darnold a lot. Another hyper athletic guy, and you finally saw that. Well, not finally. You've seen that in flashes when he's been healthy, but you really saw that on Sunday in the Bills game. Did you see that touchdown where he ran 47 yards before throwing it seven yards to Robbie Anderson? I mean, that's an athlete right there. But with him, Matt, and this kind of cuts to what I was talking about, like things that worry you, the issue is the decision making, right? I mean, that's his biggest weakness, and it's been his weakness for a while.
Yeah, for sure. The game is different now. I too like Sam Darnold a lot. His college tape wasn't that exciting to me. Didn't seem like he knew where he was protected, not protected. He didn't seem like, I'm just chalking that up for, I don't think he had the same level of coaching, quarterback coaching, as say a Josh Rosen did, or maybe some of the other guys did, Baker Mayfield. But Sam Darnold has all the tools, all the throws. That play that you're referencing against Buffalo, all I could think about was, you know, when I played, when he let that ball go, that scraping linebacker would have taken his chin off, would have knocked all of his teeth out, and it would have been maybe not a flag. Now, these quarterbacks, like, they are able to make throws and exciting plays like that because these defenders, they don't get a step and a half and to knock you out. You know, they don't have that. And so that was the glaring thing that stuck out to me. Like, wow, that would have been his last play of the game. It would have been a touchdown, and it would have been an epic play, but it would have been his last play maybe of the season. So I think Sam Darnold, again, availability is the best ability, you know, and he's already missed some games this year. Really, you know, that's probably going to be the thing with his style of play. Very impressive person, very impressive player. There's a reason he was drafted so high. There's a reason some people thought he should have gone to the Browns number one. But I like him. I like him a lot. I think he's coachable. Just, again, I think sometimes, you know, it's almost more important, like, where you get drafted to and who you get to play for. And I don't know what's going to happen in New York, but chances are that, you know, there's probably going to be a little bit of a shakeup at some point for him in his career. And how will that affect him?
For sure. And like I was saying earlier with Rosen and Allen, I mean, it's hard to say who's in the worst situation. Even Jackson, you know, obviously they have an incredible defense, but I have a lot of questions about his weapons there. So who's next for you after Sam?
I wanted to take him last time instead of Trubisky. And I just, he's an exciting prospect to me, and definitely a work in progress. But again, taking it from the defensive coordinator's perspective, I'm going to take Lamar Jackson.
Yes.
I just love the upside. You know, I called a game, a college game of his against NC State, you know, Lamar Jackson versus Bradley Chubb. And
he was so good in that game. Really, I didn't know you called it. Yes, I remember that game.
I did. But listen, but it was four D linemen that all went to the NFL. And it was like, okay, Lamar, let's see what you can do with this. And he was special. Like, he's really, really special. Now, I could find you and I could do a breakdown tape of some really, really bad quarterbacking from him. But I will say that the good and the great that I could also do can overcome the bad, because his bad are usually incompletions. They're not interceptions. Yeah. They're not fumbles. And so I really, if he can stay healthy, if he can learn to play a style of football where he does not take a lot of hits, he's not a big guy. If he can learn to play a style that is safer, to have, you know, a 17-week season plus playoffs, and then years of doing it, then this could be a real game changer in the NFL. He's actually pretty good deep ball thrower. He's actually just got to train his eyes to be a lot more disciplined. And if he can do that, I think he could be a real factor in the NFL.
I'm so glad you mentioned that his problem is incompletions, not turnovers, right? Because I think people don't talk about that enough. And that's, by the way, a big part of the reason why he's so successful and or such a good choice for the Ravens in particular. I mean, his style of football, what he's done with the run game and it complementary football with that defense, what they need is what he provides, right? He's not going to, although he has turned it over a little bit, last game wasn't really his fault, but, you know, keeping the offense on the field, for a really long time. So that is one of his strengths. I think he doesn't make boneheaded. He doesn't throw that many bonehead interceptions. He didn't in college. And it's very interesting to me, Matt, to think about him in conjunction with Josh Allen, because statistically, they're basically identical, which is hilarious, I think, given that that's the last thing Buffalo probably wanted. You know, they wanted, after Tyrod, this pocket passer, and instead they literally got in my opinion, the opposite of that. There's so many similarities between these guys. The difference is they're being used in entirely different ways. So how do you feel from a developmental standpoint, having seen Lamar in college, seeing him this year, how the Ravens are using him, which you talked about, you know, Mitchell Trubisky, Mitchell Vick, they're using him like Mike, they're baking so much of, you know, they're designing an offense, I guess, around him as a runner, and they've got a lot of design runs and they're having him run the option, which he did successfully in college. Do you think that's good for his development as a quarterback?
I think it's fine. Like, it's not that big of a deal. It's football, and he's out there playing football. And even Bobby Petrino, like, at Louisville, like, when he needed to have a play, like, gotta have it, gotta win this game.
Yeah.
A lot of times it came down to something like that. But my wish for the Ravens would have been, like, ideal, perfect world, would have been more like what I saw at Kansas City last year. You got Alex Smith, a pro, who, you know, probably is a little conservative as a player. And you have Patrick Mahomes comes in, sits on the bench, and gets better while he's sitting on the bench. A lot of times guys sit on the bench in the NFL and they do nothing. They don't develop. Coaches are worried about the starter. That's not what happens in Kansas City. And I mentioned I played for Andy Reid, and, you know, the backups get trained while the season's going on. While you're winning games, you're training the backups. And so that's what I saw last year. I felt like Alex Smith started to play a little more like Mahomes, and Mahomes started to play a little more like Alex Smith, and they almost made each other better. And that's kind of what I was hoping to see out of Baltimore. I was hoping to see Joe Flacco maybe get a little more exciting and play a little bit more like Lamar, and Lamar like play a little bit more like the Joe Flacco pocket passer, classic NFL guy, and make each other better. What I saw instead this year was Lamar, you just do Lamar type stuff, decoy, you know, run around, Taysom Hill looking like stuff. And Joe Flacco, you just stand out there with bad body language, like you're so annoyed you're not the quarterback right now. And just, it didn't, and I understand from both parts, you know, both points of view. Joe Flacco's like, man, this is like, let me try to keep my job. And Lamar's like, let me be a real quarterback. And so I get it, but the best thing for both of them would have been if they rubbed off on each other more instead of, hey, you do you and I do me. Like, that's not the best thing. But that's where we are now, and I think actually the Ravens have fallen into a situation where they can win like this. Like, they can definitely win like this, and they're cool with that. I mean, to be a playoff team, you know, with the, you know, this season could have gone either way for them, and I think they've got some good weapons. That I think they've got good coaching. People don't want to play them. You know, you'd rather play a classic pocket passer, usually. The challenge for them, though, they can't get behind. They got to play from ahead, and that's what they got to do.
I love your point about how it would have been nice to see the two quarterbacks rub off on each other a little bit like Alex Smith, which is pretty much the perfect transition if we're looking at sort of historical transitions. And although I do love that somebody, I was making fun of Joe Flacco standing with his hands on his hips playing wide receiver, and someone on Twitter said, well, maybe this is all a long con and he's going to run like a perfect route in the Super Bowl and nobody's going to be defending him, which is my dream.
I'm still waiting for Jay Cutler to do that then, if that's
the line. That was, yeah, he really rivaled Cutler in apathy in those moments. I think, yeah, you're everything you said, I just completely agree with, especially in terms of defenses and who they want to play. I mean, I'm looking at their schedule and they've got the Browns, who have a much better pass defense than run defense. You know, they want Myles Garrett run down Joe Flacco. They don't want Lamar Jackson in that level of unpredictability. So I think just right now, this offense, this team, it all makes sense. I'm going to go as kind of we wrap up. We've got just a few guys left. I'm going to go in a kind of a weird direction, and I'm going to take Josh Rosen. And I'm going to pick him as, if I had to pick one guy who might make a Jared Goff style jump where every, you know, he gets things around him improve a little bit, because he, I said earlier, Matt, like, who's in the worst situation? To me, it's a no-brainer that it's Rosen, which maybe people will say it's crazy with the Bills, but their defense has been so good. I just think at times he has shown me, he has made some throws that have made me pause and say, this guy could still be really good.
I love him. I think he's going to be great as a quarterback. I'm a believer. I think he can be really good. It's hard when you're not on a good team. Like, it's really, really hard when you're not on a good team. To, you know, you get too much credit and you get too much blame. And, you know, people wrote off Jared Goff early on. People said, oh, you're 0-7. You couldn't even see the field week one on a bad team, like, you know, first part of the season. And so from basically the end of the season until September, he was a bust. And so, that idea to think that a guy that we know for sure if a guy can or cannot play right now when he's on such a bad team.
Who knows?
You know, I don't see it. I think Josh Rosen, for me, though, he sees the field so well. Like, he sees the field very well. And being at his pro day, he's not the most imposing looking person, but he's got all the throws in his, you know, he's got all the tools in his toolbox, they say. Like, I think he can make all those throws, every throw.
Yeah, I remember he was so good over the middle in college. listen, and it's just like, who knows in Arizona? I mean, their line is so terrible, so they have to, you know, go max protect all the time, and they're kind of getting David Johnson a little bit more involved, but when Christian Kirk went out on Sunday for the game, I had no interest in watching it. So
yeah. And again, here's a team that fired their offensive coordinators. Like, you know, only two teams have gotten rid of their head coach, but there's been, it seems like, a ton of guys firing their coordinators, like, already. I mean, at least six, maybe eight. There's been a bunch of them. And so, you know, if you're Josh Rosen, I know he's thrown 5 of his 10 touchdowns to Larry Fitzgerald, but beyond that, like, what kind of plan is there for your offense besides, like, hey, find Larry? Like, that's not what we're looking for. You know, that's not elite. You know, that's where's not going to get it done over the long haul.
I've been challenging people to name a third Cardinals wide receiver. Most people can't even name a second, so that's tough. All right, Allen, Winston, Mariota, who you got?
I'm going Mariota. So listen, I like Mariota for the intangible factor. There's a lot of stuff that Mariota has that you just can't coach. And basically, the guys in that locker room, the people in that city, they believe in him. And, you know, whether it's throwing a block at the end of a game or stiff arming somebody that he shouldn't be able to stiff arm, or shoot, throwing a touchdown pass to himself in a wild card game, I just think that this guy's got an it factor that you can't coach. And again, I go back to it. He's got what you can't coach, and yet he's coachable. And so, yes, does he need to play better? Yes, he does. But can he and will he? I do believe that he will.
Yeah, you know, we do these insiders panels, and we're often asked Mariota or Winston, right? They're like linked, right, forever. And it's always been very difficult. Statistically, there's not a huge gap between them. They have obviously different styles, different flaws in their games, but I've gone with Mariota over Winston pretty consistently, not just for off-the-field reasons, but because I think you mentioned Mike Evans earlier. Winston's played with some of the best weapons in the NFL. I mean, Mariota simply has not, okay? And he's had to adjust to a bunch of different offenses over the years. Even now, over the last few games, you're finally seeing a little bit of a deep threat with Taywan Taylor, and it opens up the middle of the field and underneath throws for, you know, with Tajay Sharp, and you can throw it to Deion Lewis and stuff. But I just kind of feel like if one of those guys hasn't really been put in the perfect situation to succeed and has more upside, for me, it has been Mariota, to say nothing of the various intangibles that you cited. So I agree with that. So now it's down to Allen and Winston. I'll go with Allen for the upside. You know, we talked about him a little bit, Matt, when we talked about Lamar Jackson. You're just kind of seeing a guy who's one of the most electric runners I've seen in a while, but has struggled with decision making, has struggled with accuracy, which frankly was all quite foreseeable coming out of the draft. My upside there is that I don't like the offense that they've built around him. You know, it's funny. I saw a statistic that something like Lamar Jackson's run for, I don't know, 400 yards. It's almost entirely been on design runs. Josh is out there scrambling. Like, the offense isn't built for him to run. He's just running for his life. So perhaps in a better offense, you could see those things working better and him developing more as a passer.
Yeah. And, you know, I've actually been very, very impressed with his athleticism, but like you said, decision-making, even his college tape, I just never really felt like his eyes were in the right spot. The thing that is undeniable though, this guy's arm is unbelievable. Like, his arm, who would you buy a ticket to watch? I might buy a ticket just to watch this guy's arm. Like, Josh Allen can throw it as well as anybody. But do I believe in him as a quarterback who's going to have a long career of consistent throwing? And, like, that's a big jump. He's so raw, and he's got a long way to go in that regard. But do I enjoy watching? Yes. Do I enjoy watching a NASCAR race? Kind of, but what am I really waiting for? Kind of waiting for a crash, you know, like that's sort of what I want to see. Or it's like a hockey game. People go to a hockey game and they just want to see a fight. Like, it's a little bit how I feel about, like, Josh Allen, you know, like, you're not rooting for it to happen, but when it happens, it's the most entertaining part of the day. You know, he scrambles around left and right and just throws it up to anybody in the middle of the field. So
that pick was bad.
He's a prospect. To me, he's a prospect.
I think that's fair. And by the way, the way he plays is dangerous. He went out at some point during the game. I think he had like a bloody elbow, and I just, something's got to change in Buffalo. So let's wrap it up with Winston. I mean, you know, what are you seeing him from this year? Let me rephrase that. Have you seen any positive developments from him this year, maybe over the last few weeks?
You know, I think my hope for him is just that, you know, all the off the field stuff, like it's impossible not to mention his name and think about that first. Like this is a guy that needs to take all of the bad stuff and all the baggage and all the, you know, junk and turn it into like this amazing story where he's like this galvanized leader of a team. Because listen, he can say to every single guy in that locker room, like, dude, I was there. That was me. I was the idiot at 3 a.m., you know, in an Uber. Like, I was the idiot who did this. I was the guy that, you know, don't make the same mistakes. Trust me, I made the mistake, so guys like you don't have to. I've been there, I've done it, and mature and grow. And I think he's in an environment to do that. Dirk Cutter was my college quarterback coach. I understand what Dirk's about. I understand what Ryan Fitzpatrick's about. Sometimes it takes a guy a little longer to figure it out. You know, I guess my hope for him is that he has and will figure it out. But quite honestly, when you are the quarterback of an NFL team, they're going to hand you over the keys to the franchise. Like, you need to step up and be a leader at all times, on and off the field. I mean, Lovie Smith is a great football coach. He got let go because they didn't want to separate Dirk Cutter and Jameis Winston. That's why he got let go. And so if Tampa has the same GM next year as they have this year, you know, the guy who drafted Jameis is going to be there. He's going to get another opportunity. Sometimes the first overall pick, you get nine lives. Yeah, if it's the same GM, it's the same quarterback. If it's a new GM, it'll be a new quarterback. It's not like his
20th life. that's fair.
But so him as a quarterback, like, it's almost secondary to me. Like, he needs to figure out the rest of it. And from what I've heard, he is headed that way. It is trending that way. I like him a lot. But you know, this is a big deal. Like, this is time to be an adult, and it's time to, you know, behave like an NFL starting quarterback. And we've seen flashes of it, but again, consistency. You talk about the greats, you talk about Drew Brees, and you talk about Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, consistently, guy you can count on, a guy your teammates can count on, your coaches can count on, your fan base can count on. And again, that's why these guys are under 25. I think the youngest guy in this group is Sam Darnold. You know, some of it you're saying, hey, we're going to take upside because that guy's 21 years old. And some of these other guys are 25. Well, let's imagine what Sam Darnold's going to be like when he's 25, you know. And so it's taken Jameis longer than it should have. But listen, again, the talent and the ability is there. It's just, can you put it all together, and how many chances will you get?
Yeah, and look, we just mentioned a ton of guys. They don't have incidents like he has, and repeatedly. So that, and that's, you know, forget about being you're a starting quarterback, just be a good person, right? And so he's off my board for those reasons. From a football perspective, it's going to be interesting. I was interested that you said you thought they would definitely keep him because, man, he's so up and down. And here's a crazy fact. Over the last 4 weeks, Jameis Winston has ranked first in QBR in the NFL. And he did this last year too, and people forget. He has these stretches where he stops throwing interceptions. He actually was running around last year. For me, again, and this is just if I was able to set aside all the other stuff, he's just not consistent, okay? And we're talking about Allen and Rose and these guys. We don't know them. I think we know at this point. You know, he's been in the league a while. He's going to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, but, you know, he's at the end of the list.
And I would say, though, there's no guarantees of that. Like, there's no guarantees. Like, he will get his best chance to be a starting quarterback is in Tampa because the person who drafted you, who you're on his resume, and he needs you to be successful, is going to give you every chance to be successful. And that happened with Brett Favre. Like, Ron Wolf traded a first rounder with Atlanta to bring Brett Favre to Green Bay. And Brett Favre was throwing interception after interception. And people, even on that coaching staff, were like, hey, we got to turn the page on this Brett Favre guy. He's not the guy. We need to go to Mark Brunell or Ty Detmer or somebody else. And again, when you give up, you know, he's on your resume. That's the move you made. You're going to do whatever you can to help him be successful, give him opportunity after opportunity. And Brett Favre was able to turn the page because they didn't give up on him. Ron Wolf, Mike Holmgren, they didn't give up on him. And he turned the page and he became the player that, you know, we remember. But it didn't start out, you know, it wasn't smooth sailing all the time. And I think all those guys would tell you that. And so with Jameis, same thing. If the people who drafted you are still there and they don't have a better option waiting, you're going to get every opportunity to show that they were right all along.
Nine lives, you said. And we're going in an offseason where there's not going to be a lot of better options out there in free agency or the draft. So, listen, we always do one quick segment at the very end of the show. Let's hear it.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Nope, not getting paid for it. All right, Matt, so I'm going to ask you five questions. Fifth one is from my dog, Lenny. I battled with this before. I was like, can I actually ask Matt Hasselbeck a question in my dog's voice? And I answered, the answer was yes. So we're going to do that.
Wow.
So it's horrible, and it's going to be hard for me to live with myself after this. But number one, we've been talking about young quarterbacks all day. If there's one thing you could go back and tell yourself when you were just 22 or 21, what would it be as a quarterback?
Don't be a fan. You're there to take their job. Like, that's it. You know, I mean, I was just so excited to be around the guys I was around. You know, I remember just being with first round picks, guys that I had their poster up in my wall, or not a poster, but like a Sports Illustrated cover. And it was like, wow, I get to play with you. And I should have seen what like my coaches were seeing. They were like, listen, you are here to beat him out. And I was like, oh, not me.
Yeah.
You know who that is? You know who that guy is? Come on. That's what I would change from the get go.
Interesting. I feel like I could have taken that advice before starting this podcast. All right. Number two. So you saw the Derrick Henry run, and people were bringing up Beastquake, and was it better? Like, don't be ridiculous. That was nothing compared to Beastquake, in my opinion. So I wanted to ask you though, what was it like, you know, standing on the field and watching Beastquake?
Listen, it was awesome. I mean, every single play, I would say, or that you get to play at that stadium in Seattle is incredible. But the amount of crowd noise for that game, we were 7-9 hosting a wild card game, which we, you know, people didn't think we deserved to do. We won the division. We had a losing record. We had a ton of adversity that year. Pete Carroll's first year. And we're hosting the world champ, Drew Brees, New Orleans Saints. We didn't deserve to be in that game with them. And we were just toe-to-toe with them, and it was a great game. And then Marshawn busts out that run. It was incredible. I mean, it was absolutely incredible. It didn't feel real. It felt like the ground was shaking, and then I heard afterwards it was. So I don't know if that's what I was feeling or if it was just an out-of-body experience, but super, super fun.
Were you just
one of the great
perplexed?
Memories I'll have.
Like watching him squirt through, I mean, what, just like, did that, it just didn't make sense. I remember watching it. And what was it like being close? Were you just like, how?
Well, you know, we were in kind of a, what we call 4-minute offense, where it's like stay in bounds, no penalties, two hands on the ball. You're not necessarily trying to fight for every yard. You're really just trying to like move that clock along. And Marshawn just has a angry running style, and he just kept going and going, and I don't even know how I got down there. I could barely run. I didn't even play the game before because I couldn't walk, couldn't run. And, like, I'm down there in the end zone. I'm not even sure how. Like I said, it just
slacked out.
The adrenaline was just, I don't know if there's a way to measure that. But it was, I don't know if we could ever all do it again. But it was really cool to be in the end zone with the offensive linemen, with the wide receivers, with the guy who just ran the touchdown. It was really weird. Yeah. I don't know if I've been a part of a play like that. It was an all-timer.
Question three. Have you ever heard of Cable Thanos?
No, I don't think so. What is that?
Okay, it's this weird Twitter account that posts these crazy Seahawks videos. I recommend it. I'll send it to you afterwards. Question four.
Okay.
This is going to be a touchy one for you. One game, neutral field, same weapons, Andrew Luck or Russell Wilson. Who wins that one game for you?
What is it? Same field, neutral, wet.
Everything's the same. Yeah, just one game. You just got one game to win it. Everything else equal. You got Luck or Wilson?
I'll tell you what. I mean, I was there. I was there. They played against each other. And it was an amazing game. And Andrew Luck ended up winning it. But Russell Wilson had this throw at the end, and he took a shot. Like, he took one of the hardest hits I've ever seen anyone take. I guess I'd have to give the edge to Andrew. But, you know, if you went like a seven-game series, I could see Russell Wilson. You know, I don't know. That'd be like a... You know,
stuff.
I don't know. Either one.
It's
That's part of the hard thing for me is that I'm like really good friends with a lot of these guys. Like, and
I know.
I'm not really rooting for somebody. You know, it's like if my two brothers were playing pickup basketball, who do you think is going to win? Like, I don't know. I'll take Nathaniel over Tim because he's younger. Like, it doesn't mean I like love Nathaniel more than Tim or what. Like, it's just, I don't know. Yeah. I'm guessing. I don't know. But
well,
I love them both.
It's so hard. It's so hard to tell, right? Because they've played in such different offenses with such different weapons, and it's,
but you know they could play the same style. Like, I think they're both talented enough to play each other's style. I guess the answer I gave you is simply because I saw them play head to head, you know, one time up close and personal. And Andrew played amazing. I'll say this about Andrew: he wasn't intimidated like most guys are intimidated to go up against Richard Sherman. Most quarterbacks I see on film, they are 100% intimidated to throw at Richard Sherman. Andrew Luck was like, "Hi, Richard. Remember me from Stanford? Remember when you were one of my wide receivers at Stanford?" Like, he wasn't intimidated. Kobe Fleener wasn't intimidated. Kobe Fleener ran probably the best slant route on Richard Sherman that I've seen anyone run on him. And it just turned him all the way around. And Kobe's a tight end. I think there's just something to playing against your friends, like your buddies from college, that you're, that intimidation factor is just, you know, it's just, nah, I'm just playing with my friends. Like, these are my buddies.
I love that. I feel like T.Y. Hilton, who to this day is like the nicest guy I've ever interviewed, by the way, I feel like he burnt Richard Sherman in that game. Maybe I'm wrong. This was when, what year was this? Like 2000? Was this the rookie season or 13?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if he burnt Richard Sherman. I don't, he burns everybody, but I feel like I would remember if someone burned Richard Sherman badly, but T.Y., he's a great deep ball receiver. He tracks the ball on deep balls as well as anybody. And I don't recall many people. You know, that's how you know when you're really, really good. If you can remember a play years and years ago when you, like, say, once beat Richard Sherman and you remember it, it's like, well, you must be pretty good. It reminds me of, like, Walter Jones. People would be like, oh, I remember this one time in 2002 when Walter Jones gave up a sack. It's like, well, yeah, that's a compliment, I guess.
That's funny. I can remember the one time Aaron Rodgers has thrown on Richard Sherman. By the way, speaking of quarterbacks who refuse to throw on Sherman, he just won't throw it at him. It's amazing. And they've met up a lot of times over the years. Okay, last question. So like I said, I'm going to read this in my dog's voice. I can't believe I'm doing this. I apologize in advance. Please don't. Okay. This is a question for my dog. Matt, was Super Bowl XL the worst officiated game in NFL history, or just one of the top five worst officiated games in NFL history?
Can I go back to that Dallas-Philly game that I saw the other night? Huh? Can I do that?
No! Come on.
Listen,
come
I'll
on.
Say this. This is something that really bothered me about that Super Bowl, and it sort of bothers me when they do it now. You know, the officiating group, what people don't realize is those guys work, you know, men and women, they work as a team. Like, they work as a team in unison, much like an offense does or a defense does, or we, you know, call a game on ESPN, like producer, director, play-by-play, color analyst, sideline. Like, it's all, we work as a team. Even on our pregame shows, we've got producers, we got directors, we got stage managers, like everyone's got a role. And we know each other. And so what they did for my Super Bowl, as I was told, they brought in like the people that graded out the best at like line judge, back judge, umpire,
like an all-star.
Referee.
Yeah.
And so that's not your team. It's like the same reason why the Super Bowl
Monday,
team
the same thing
the
that
Pro
happened
Bowl
on
team.
Yeah, sorry.
They did this year, right?
Yes, that's what I was going to say. They did this year, and it failed miserably for the exact reason you're describing. They're supposed to work together.
It failed miserably. So take any business that you're in, any business, or just, we'll just stay in TV because that's what I'm doing currently. It'd be like if you took, like, one of the best producers at Fox and one of the best directors at CBS and then the best host at ESPN. And then that, like, we don't know each other. Like, it's not a team. Like, sure, you're good at your job, but you're going to just show up and be in the biggest game of your life and then all of a sudden expect to play your best or officiate your best. These are human beings. And so even being in that game, when flags were thrown, the officials always, in every game, they huddle up and they talk. And they say, players, get away. We were talking right now. I always listen in. Okay? And it's not a science. Like, all right, well, I'm going to say I saw this, and I'm going to do this. Like, they work in unison. Like, I got your back. And I just think it's unfair to the officials when you put them in that kind of a situation. And so that's a philosophical maybe disagreement that I have with the league. But I'll tell you this. Since that Super Bowl, I can't tell you how many officials have come up to me and explained just what I explained to you. Like, hey, it's not fair to the officials when they do it that way. It's so much harder for us to do our job when we're not working with our crew. And so, you know, whatever line of business you're in, whether you like the people you work with or not, you're going to feel more comfortable as long as they're competent with, you know, working with them, especially one time on one given Sunday on a, you know, in February in Detroit.
Well, Matt, I'm going to answer the question. It was the worst officiating game in NFL history, according to me.
Okay.
Listen, we weren't a team, you and I, before today, but now I feel like we could, you know, work on a committee. They say, never meet your heroes, but I feel like after meeting me and Lenny, you weren't disappointed. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Okay. My dog, Titan, wants to say hi, too. He's never been on a podcast. To my knowledge, I got him when I played for the Tennessee Titans. I thought it was going to be my last team. I got to Indianapolis, met Andrew Luck for the first time. I said, what's your dog's name? I said, Titan. He said, you're going to have to change your dog's name. That's not going to work. I said, dude, I don't think you can change a dog's name. So I don't know if this is going to work. So it ended up working out fine for all of us. But Titan's a good dog.
All right. Titan up.